Hey everyone, before we get into this week's episode, I just want to quickly mention that we did get a sponsor for the show. The PT Advantage is back, and it works out great because those guys are fantastic. They have a fantastic product, and I'm more than happy to have them back on the show. So they kind of heard about the needed support, and they are back. So this week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by the PTAdvantage.com, an online personal training solution to help trainers save time and make more money. Check them out at the PTAdvantage.com. Well, welcome to this episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 274. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and I am super happy to have back on the show, which I think is like the fifth time. I think so. Tom Venuto. Tom, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah. So, obviously, it's always great to have you on the show. You're known for burn the fat, feed the muscle, and the crazy thing that has come to pass is that it is now like a super encyclopedia of knowledge that's gone into print, and it's going to be coming out in December. I think it's December 10th, right?
Yeah, that's right. December 10th.
And that's one of the things that we're going to be talking about in a little bit, but I'm going to give my initial reaction from the book because Tom was nice enough to send out a copy for pre-release, and going through it these last couple of days, I must say it is literally like an encyclopedia of fat loss and body composition and transformations. Like, it is the step-by-step process, leaving no stone unturned. And literally, I think you talk about it a little bit in the book, but it is like a no-fail approach, because one of the big things, we're actually going to talk about this a little bit in the show, but I think we definitely have the information that we need to like find out like what's the equation for fat loss, but you really kind of narrowed in and locked in to like, you know, why people fail and how to avoid those failures.
Well, thanks, Kevin. I'm really glad that you said it was an encyclopedia of fat loss, because that's exactly what it was intended to be. In fact, for years, this has been out as an ebook for 10 years now. I can hardly believe it. And now, you know, going into the 10th and 11th year, it's going into print. And we're calling it the Bible of Fat Loss, and I didn't come up with that. It was all my customers who said Bible of Fat Loss. And every once in a while, somebody says, like, yeah, this is a reference manual or encyclopedia. And so I appreciate you saying that. And yeah, it's meant to be a practical guide. There's science underneath it, but the whole gist of Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle is how to take that science and apply it in your life, and just break it down into a practical level that anybody can follow. And I say anybody because the tagline on this is Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle, the secrets of the leanest people in the world. And those leanest people in the world are bodybuilders and fitness models and physique athletes, but this isn't just for bodybuilders. It's about how regular people can, steal some of the bodybuilding and fitness model secrets and use them themselves to reach whatever their goals are.
Well, yeah, and you talk about that a little bit in the book. Like, if you're going to, I think you might have mentioned on the show in the past, but like, you know, if you wanted to learn how to lose fat, you should look at the best in the world that are, you know, the people that are best in the world at doing that, like the bodybuilders and the figure competitors and stuff like that. And obviously, you have a great history with yourself of competing and stuff like that. And obviously, I'm guessing you brought a lot of that to the table as well when it came to the book.
Yeah, it's weaved throughout the book, again, in a way that the average person can relate to, because it's not about being a bodybuilder or getting ripped unless you want to. Probably 90% of my clients, even throughout the years back when I was competing in bodybuilding, they weren't bodybuilders, they're just regular people. But I think that anybody could call themselves a bodybuilder if they're strength training and if they're feeding their body with nutritious food. And I think if you do call yourself a bodybuilder or call yourself a strength athlete or a fitness athlete and work that into your identity, it changes your behavior completely.
And, again, we alluded to this before, but it's December 10th, and you can pre-order it right now on Amazon.com. And it's, again, it's like $16 on Amazon.com. It's kind of nuts what publishers can do to get, like, this amount of information in someone's hand for such a great price. But obviously, people should also be checking out burnthefatfeedthemuscle.com, because you're going to be doing some like bonus stuff for people on there that order the book through that, right?
Yeah, we're going to do a really big special promo in December when we release this.
Cool.
So if anybody wasn't sure if they wanted to buy it, you know, it's going to be called Burn the Fat and Friends. You know, a group of us are getting together to put together a really great bonus package with extra workouts, cookbooks, all kinds of goodies. And if somebody buys it, sends us the receipt, then we'll send them to a link to get all the extra stuff. So just a couple months away from the big countdown.
Well, let's we have a ton of stuff to go over, so we'll get right into it, and we'll obviously talk about some more of that stuff at the end. But we got some questions in from the audience. We're going to hit on some of those first and kind of see where it takes us. But Suzanne submitted a question. How do you encourage and ensure compliance to a program? What factors positively affect compliance?
Well, first of all, I think that's the right I think that's the right question to ask, because I think there's everywhere you look, especially on the internet, there's debates about everything. And even before the internet, there was the big gigantic debate. Low carb versus high carb is the biggest debate in history. And whichever of the debates you're talking about, I think it might be taking us down the wrong road, because it's not so much about what diet you follow as what makes you comply to your diet. So the question is spot on. I mean, if you somebody asked me what was new in the research recently, and the answer surprised them. It wasn't any breakthrough in some metabolic pathway or protein, you know, synthesis, new knowledge there. At the end of these studies, whether it was a randomized trial or one of these longitudinal studies that follows people for years and years and years, the researchers are starting to write in their conclusion of the study, the most important thing is, can you stick with the program or not? We need to find ways for people to stick with their program. So I think that one of the biggest reasons people fall off is they're still getting into the forbidden food mentality. This banning of food, widespread banning of food, that is really still the status quo in the diet industry. It's blaming it on one evil food. And if you just cut that food or entire food group out of your diet, that will solve the problem. And I think it's backfiring on a lot of people, because, you know, it's no way to live to cut your favorite foods out. I mean, naturally, we want to eat the nutrient-dense foods most of the time, but you have to give yourself that little outlet. And, you know, for over a decade, I've been teaching people just to make a compliance rule for yourself. And it's you'll have to set it yourself, decide how strict you want to be. But for a lot of people, a 90% compliance rule is beautiful. 90% of the time, eat off of your healthy, nutrient-dense, unprocessed food list 10% of the time. Let yourself have whatever you want. That really goes a long, long way in helping people stick with the plan.
Another question that we had was from Zoran. I hope I get that correctly. Tom, first of all, I admire your work and integrity and wish you many more prolific years in this industry. Great way to start a question. My question is this. Where do you start with complete beginners regarding calorie and portion control? What are the simplest guidelines through which you could help the average Joe enter and maintain a caloric deficit?
Well, the first thing is to have a plan in the first place. Mm-hmm. A lot of people wing it. Some people are just more intuitive by nature, their personality, but I don't think that there's any substitute for having a plan. First, you set your goals. You got to have a crystal clear goal and have clarity about your goal. Then you can create a plan to help you achieve that goal. And when I talk about a plan, he was asking about food. I think of two different kinds of plans. I think about the food plan, which is your meal plan, and then your training plan. The technique that I've been recommending for years is create a meal plan on paper. And 15, 20 years ago, I was just using a spreadsheet. I would get out an old Excel spreadsheet and just create meal by meal. And I would create cells for the numbers, for calories, protein, carbs, fat, tally them up for each meal, and then subtotal them and then total them for the day. And now we're using... there's apps everywhere that'll do this for you. So today it's easier than ever. There's no reason for people not to do this. There's so much. So we actually even built our own software for our Burn the Fat members, but there's free apps all over the place. Use them, create a meal plan, print it out or carry it with you electronically. And that's your eating goal for the day. I mean, that's the best place to start. So what all you need to know is what numbers to plug in. And it's not hard to find calorie formulas. You can find them online. You can find them in my book, Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle. You need to set your calorie maintenance level. If your goal is fat loss, clip a little bit off that so you're in a calorie deficit. So that's your number one number, is get your calories right. Very important. That's one of the top priorities. And the beginner needs to focus on kind of like a hierarchy of priorities. So calories, number one. Then break down your macronutrients, your protein, carbs, and fats. And there's really a lot more flexibility in those numbers than I think a lot of experts want to agree on. You know, if you're off 5% here or there, 10% here or there, it doesn't matter all that much, as long as you know, you're getting enough protein and you've got a nice balance. And I think this is what sabotages more beginners than anything else, is they micromanage their macronutrients. It's kind of a joke in our inner circle. You know, when I see people doing that and they're trying to get to the, you know, the 10th of a percentage point, I'm like, micromanaging, stop micromanaging and just get your numbers in the ballpark and then just get started. Because you just get started, then you develop a baseline. After 1 week, you have a baseline, measure your results. And based on those results each week, you just tweak it, tweak the calories up or down, tweak the carbs up or down. And from that point forward, you know, your results tell you exactly what to do next. It's really simple.
So, you know, again, we're going to be talking about some stuff that's in the book, but one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about was, you know, when people are obviously trying to get leaner, they sometimes will go through the process of maybe getting like access to a plan. They might pick up like a book or something like that, but after reading it and thinking like they're ready to go, it's kind of like a failure to start thing where they go in like a week in and then they just kind of go to failure. And then you see people like looking for the next program. That didn't work for me. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about, you know, why people keep failing when it comes to these programs, or when it comes to just trying to reach their, you know, body composition goals.
Yeah, a lot of people just lose focus. I mean, life is busy. Life is crazy these days. You know, there's a million things, you know, clamoring for our attention. And one of the reasons I talk about goals so much is because goals are a focusing tool. And a lot of people, they either don't set goals or they don't have clarity on their goals. But even people who have goals and they have clear goals, they don't keep focusing on them every single day. You know, for most people, goal setting is once in January and then that's it. They set a goal, they write it down once. That's the only time they think about it or they write about it. So the simplest tool that you can use to focus on goals is, assuming that you have set a goal and it's a clear goal, is the goal card, a little card that you carry in your pocket everywhere you go. I've always had a challenge to people: try to catch me without my goal card. If you ever meet me in person, see if, hey, Tom, I'm testing you. Do you have your goal card? And I always pull the card out of my pocket because I'm always working on a goal. You know, it's, and sometimes more than one, different areas of my life. There's, you know, there's always a fitness goal, there's a business goal, and so on. But what I do differently, and what all successful people do differently, is they're constantly focused on that goal. Every single morning, they read their goals. If you write them out by hand every morning, that's one of the most powerful things you can do to stay focused. And that goal card, it's always in your pocket. And every time you have a spare moment, you're standing in the bank waiting in line, and you know how waiting in line just takes an eternity. So you just reach in your pocket, read your goal card. You're sitting at a stoplight, you reach in your pocket, you read your goal card. You know, just spare moments, you're in the elevator. Anytime you get a chance, you pull your card out and read it. And that constant repetition will ingrain a goal into your subconscious mind to the point that it starts changing your behavior. So you're thinking about it all the time and your behavior just starts to change automatically. People wonder, why do I do the things that I do? I mean, why do you just have these lapses? Why do you skip a workout? Why do you binge? Because they don't have that goal keeping them focused and they don't have it embedded in their subconscious. I mean, there's a long list of other reasons. If you want to talk about other reasons that you know, people fail and people fall off, that's where I'd start, with a goal, clear goal, and you constantly focus on it every single day and don't stop.
You mentioned you talked a lot about goal setting in the book, and I thought it was fantastic that you even – you know, you get someone that's, you know, wrote like 70 pages into the book, they get a good amount of information under their belt, and then you talk about goal setting and you say, all right, stop, literally put the book down right now, write out your goals for a week, you know, a month, 3 months, 6 months, a year from now. Because again, I think, you know, a lot of people say, you know, set goals and stuff like that. But then when people listen to this podcast, they don't do it. They just listen to it and they're like, oh yeah, you know, when I get home from my drive, I'll write down some goals. No, literally, like, pull over the car right now and start writing down some stuff that you want to do. And you said, like, in the book, to like, and this is great, have like emotional reasons behind it. Like, try to be as honest as possible why you want these goals.
Yeah, well, having a goal is one thing. That just keeps you focused. But what keeps you motivated, what keeps you motivated to keep working towards the goal is the reason why. I mean, that's the underlying reason. And the motivation, the more emotional it is, the better. So there's always a second step. I have all of my clients, all my readers do. After they set the goal, don't stop there. I want you to write something else down. This is my goal. Why do I want to achieve it? And you can have motivation in both directions too. Some people think negative motivation is not a good thing, but I think having motivation that both pushes and pulls can be really, really powerful. So it doesn't hurt to write down why you want it and why you want to move towards it, what it'll do for you when you achieve it, and what you want to move away from. Like, what you don't want can be really powerful. You know, probably the number one biggest reason I hear come up all the time is family and kids. I've met so many people who have a rock bottom experience. You ask, how does somebody let their weight just keep climbing and climbing and climbing until they're 100, 120, 150 pounds overweight? You know, it's easier not to change, but then it reaches this threshold and one day something happens and it triggers them and they realize, if I don't do something, I'm going to die. I'm not going to be here for my kids. I'm not going to see my kids grow up. And for them, that's their reason. So they write down their goal. And they say, and this is why I want to achieve it, because I want to be here for my kids. I want to be a good role model for my kids. And once they have that, they've got the motivation. They've got the lock. They've got the lock on it. And that's when the change happens.
All right. So we're going to move on a little bit. And in the beautiful and also sometimes terrifying world where we have Facebook, there seems to be, you know, there's lots of people that work in this industry now. Some people are saying, you know, don't weigh yourself, you know, take the scale, throw it out of the window. And, you know, other people are saying, you know, weigh yourself every day so you're getting constant feedback on where you are. Some people are saying, don't even, you know, look in the mirror. Like, what's your stance on this whole thing? Because you talk about it a little bit in the book, but like, what's the best routine for making sure like you're maintaining your progress or, you know, getting stuck?
Well, people are different. There's some people that weighing themselves every day may not be a good idea just because of how they react to it emotionally. But for the most part, I personally am a huge believer in tracking, self-monitoring, tracking, weighing, measuring everything. I think you should measure everything that you want to improve. And it's kind of a maxim in business that what gets measured and tracked gets improved. Any business manager will tell you this, any good coach in any sport, as soon as you start tracking the numbers, that alone improves performance. So, I mean, if you want to lose weight, if you want to cut body fat, you measure body fat, you measure body weight and you track it. You just can't get too emotionally involved in what the scale alone says, because obviously the scale by itself is only so valuable. You know, you lose weight, but what kind of weight do you lose? So the next step beyond weight is always combine your weight with your body fat percentage. So let's talk not just about weight and about the scale, but body composition. And if you track that every week and log it down into a progress chart, you have all the information you need to know what to do next. If you hit a plateau, you know what to do. You'll know that you hit a plateau first of all, and then you know what to do next. But also, I think it's really interesting that the research has looked at this. The National Weight Control Registry did studies on regular weighing, even daily weighing. International Journal of Obesity did studies on this. And almost all of the research says that all kinds of self-monitoring, the more stuff you track and measure, the better your results are going to be. So, you know, the method I teach is use a progress chart. Always have a progress chart. Get yourself into a feedback loop system. So you have a official weigh-in day every week. Monday's a good day. Keeps you in check on the weekend. Weigh in, do your body fat test. Write down not just your scale weight, but body fat percentage, lean body mass, the change. And when you have that, when you're tracking that every week, that gives you the motivation and it's like a guidance system. It just tells you exactly what to do next so that you can let your results dictate your approach and what comes next.
So again, another thing with the internet and stuff like that, where there are so many different options on like low carb, or, you know, people posting stuff saying, I've never felt better since I've been on like a paleo diet and all this stuff. So what do you think is the best way for people to determine what's going to be kind of the best, you know, strategy when it comes to like macronutrient breakdown? I know you talked about a little bit, not to overstress it too much, but do you think it is the case where some people just like do better on a lower carb diet or a higher carb diet?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I think that's for behavioral, psychological reasons, personal preferences, lifestyle choice, as well as biological reasons. How do you know what's best for you? Well, first of all, we come back full circle to the compliance thing. If you want to follow somebody else's plan that has a lot of restrictions, let's say it's banning a whole group of carbs or all carbs together, and that doesn't suit your lifestyle, I mean, you're not going to be able to stick with that. Even if that were the best diet, it doesn't help very much. So you have to, it's know thyself. You have to know yourself. And I just, some people know right off the bat that if they cut carbs, they're going to suffer. And other people know that reducing the carbs is really the only thing that works for them. For a lot of people, cutting the carbs helps them eat less automatically. For some people, they feel less hunger that way. So you really have to kind of tune into, use your sensory acuity and tune into how it makes you feel. There's no doubt about it that low carb is a viable approach, and so is high carb. Yeah, I honestly think the debate is moot. It can both work. It's really just about finding out your body type. I was really fascinated with metabolic typing for years, and I was just trying to figure out if there's any legitimacy to it, and looked at all the research. And I think it can all be boiled down to: are you carb tolerant or carb intolerant? And to what degree if you are. So if there's one X factor in your nutrition, it's that carb amount. So the macronutrient ratios, they do matter. And the one that matters the most is dialing in that carb intake. So, in the Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle program, instead of making it low carb, instead of making it high carb, one way or the other, it's better than low carb. It's carb customized. And what you do is you look at your carb intake as, it's not a switch that's on or off, it's a dial. And you dial it up or you dial it down based on your body type and based on your results. And if you're doing that progress chart, if you're measuring your body comp each week, and you reduce your carbs and body fat starts going down, you're like, wow, this works. Well, it's working for you. And anybody who has to increase a calorie deficit, I mean, look, it's an energy balance equation. It's not that carbs make you fat or carbs are inherently fattening outside of how easy it is to overeat them. It's a calorie deficit, but anybody who wants to increase their calorie deficit, a good way to do it is start pulling down the carbs first. That's the X factor, and especially target the sugar first, and then the starchy carbs. So really, at the strictest level, if you're going low carb, you're going to be eating lean proteins, healthy fats, and fibrous carbs, lots of greens.
One more nutrition question, then we'll go into some training stuff. But, again, talking about the importance of nutrient timing for non-athletes, there's people out there that will literally like blow a blood vessel in their eye if they don't get a post-workout shake like within 5 minutes of training. How essential is that for the average lifter? And, where should people really put their focus on when it comes to like nailing their nutrition?
It has been really interesting watching this over the years, watching how opinions have changed. Like you said, the post-workout drink or the post-workout protein and carbs was just absolutely sacred for a while. And then everybody started saying it's not important. And everybody was completely confused, which is it? The research is itself is all over the map. I mean, first they were talking about you got to get fast protein, you got to take in the whey because it's an anabolic quick protein, so make sure you get that. And then a researcher came along and said, well, wait a minute, that was under a certain condition where you were fasted, and so it's not applicable to real world where you're eating, you know, regular meals throughout the day. And besides, another study came out that said the casein protein, that's slow. You need that because that's anti-catabolic. The whey protein is too fast, and everybody's head is just completely spinning, and they don't know what to think anymore. So one thing that still seems pretty clear, and Brad Schoenfeld and Alan Aragon did a really good write-up on this, is the protein pre and post workout seems to be still a pretty solid recommendation. So kind of bracketing your workout with a meal that contains protein, and the people that don't like to work out with a heavy meal in their stomach beforehand, they might go with supplements for the protein, whether it's aminos or a protein drink, and then they don't have a heavy meal sloshing around in their stomach. But that does seem to have some research behind it. And I really like to look at everything from the point of what does the research say? What does the real world say? And put the two together. You got to pay attention to the research. I think it's really more important than ever to take an evidence-based approach, but not be so scientific that you're ignoring your results. I think the two together, the mix of the art and the science together, is really where it's at. And I think that both the research and the real world is suggesting that the pre and post workout protein is still a good idea. The carbs, which this is interesting because for a long time everybody said, yeah, protein and carbs and big giant carb meal after your workout is absolutely mandatory. And that part seems to be still being researched and is kind of up in the air. But you know, for the best bang for my buck, I would say bracket your workout with protein, at least the protein, and I'm still a lot in favor of protein and carbs. Just even just for the partitioning, for the recovery, it just seems to make a lot of sense to take in more carbs and more protein after your workout. But the bottom line with all of this nutrient timing thing is it's minutia compared to the bigger picture stuff. The bigger picture stuff is to get your calories. You need deficit calories if you want to burn fat. You need surplus calories if you want to gain muscle. You need to hit your macros right, and you need to get all your micronutrition in. So make sure that a good majority of your calories are coming from healthy sources. Get that stuff right first, and then worry about the details. Because this thing about you have to get protein in within 7.6 minutes after your workout, you're going to go catabolic. That's definitely not true.
Well, you know, again, talking about recovery and things like that, let's go into training for a second, because again, a lot of people that are going to be checking out this book, they're going to again probably be on the fat loss end of the spectrum, maybe not necessarily in the bodybuilding or even the you know, trying to be a strongman or something like that. So, how do you like to you know, set up programming so people aren't necessarily doing too much in the gym? You see people that go in and doing 10 sets of 10 squats and then 10 sets of 10 chin-ups and then another set of, you know, or 10 more. So like, they just have so much volume. And then when it comes to recovery, they're just not able to get back up. And then for the next session, they're just cooked. So how do you like to at least address that and, you know, dial that in, so you're like just basically getting what you need to get done in without wasting your time in the gym and then feeling like crap the next day? That's a huge question. I know.
Well, I definitely regretted the last time I did 10 sets of 10 on squats. I wasn't walking.
I swear,
again, quite a few days.
It's still the unfortunate thing when, like, you wake up in the morning and you're waiting for your dog to pee outside. You open up Facebook and you're like, going to the gym, doing 10 sets of 10. I'm like, what the hell are you guys still doing?
Well, you know, there's so many different kind of workouts that can be effective. It's kind of like diet. Everybody's been debating about the ideal diet, and there's so many different ways that can work. You know, it's almost better to look for the commonalities instead of the differences. But you can't pick a program if you don't know what your goals are. So I always keep coming back to goals. Tell me what your goals are, and then we can help you pick the right program. How long have you been training? Are you a complete beginner, or are you experienced? Is your goal bodybuilding in its physique, or is it strength, or is it athletic performance, or is it conditioning? The answer to that question is going to dictate what kind of program you're on. So, you know, I gave a lot of thought to this when I was doing the new version of the book, because the inspiration for Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle came from the bodybuilding world. And most bodybuilders are doing body part split routines. Even to this day, they're doing 3-day splits and 4-day splits, 3-day splits like chest and back on one day, arms and shoulders the next day, and legs on the third day, or like a 4-day split, which I tend to favor, which is chest and biceps on one day, shoulders and triceps the next day, back, and I throw in calves and I do legs on the fourth day. But it may not necessarily be the right workout for the majority of people who don't have bodybuilding goals. So if we want to recommend an ideal program for the largest number of people, it's really hard to go wrong with, for a beginner, it's hard to go wrong with a full body workout. It's tough to go wrong there. So that's a pretty good decision. And if you're doing a full body workout, you're not going to be doing 10 sets of 10. You know, the beginner is just going to start off, I mean, probably the first workout, they're going to do a set. And then the next workout, they'll do two, and then they'll come up to 3 sets. And 3 sets per exercise is a pretty good best practice. And they probably only need 1 exercise per body part. And a beginner can zip through that in 30 minutes. And then the next step up, and this is universally, I found one of the best general all-purpose training programs, is a 2-day split. And back in the early days when I used to do it, I would do a push-pull. I would do chest, shoulders, triceps, and legs, back, and biceps. And I was really surprised a few years ago, Men's Fitness asked me to write a workout, and they gave me some really specific parameters. And I set it up as an upper lower body split, upper body one day, and then lower body and abs the next day. There's a little more to do on the upper body day, so it's a little bit heavier workload then. And that workout turned out to be the most popular workout that I ever wrote and prescribed to my readers. And we kept testing it for 3 years and kept tweaking it. And to this day, after 3 years of beta testing that workout, a simple 2-day split is the one that got the best results for the most people. So that's the workout that we put in the new version of the book. It's called the New Body 28, because it's a 28-day training cycle. And on a training cycle like that, there's a periodization program that's very, very simple to avoid overtraining. We're not pushing it 100% every single week. We're cycling the intensity, building it up to a peak, and then deloading and backing off, not always training to failure, but training to failure sometimes. And another really effective technique that I find is hard to go wrong with is changing the rep ranges. So instead of always doing something like a heavy 5 sets of 5, or instead of always doing high reps, it's a mix. There's a medium day, which is a hypertrophy day, and then there's a heavier day, which is a strength day. So that's a pretty good, yeah, it is a big question, Kevin. So, I mean, it's hard to answer all those questions, but I think I just, hopefully gave some good ideas for best practice. And, you really got to think about your goals, your training age, whether you're beginner or advanced. And when you're clear on your goals, it's a lot easier to pick the right program.
I would love to ask you, just because, you know, the new book's coming out at the end of the year, and really, like, what's do you think is going to be, like, the next thing that we're really looking into to squeeze a little bit more out of getting results when it comes to fat loss and stuff like that? Is there a new angle on research or things that have kind of piqued your interest that, yeah, maybe there could be something in here that we could tap into this research that we're seeing that could give us a benefit when it comes to either, you know, training or nutrition or recovery?
I like to follow all the new research. I think it's really interesting. I enjoy reading what the guys are putting out. Gotta give props to Alan Aragon for his research review. Brad Schoenfeld's doing some great work. Brett Contreras is putting out a research review. James Krieger's been putting one out. I mean, there's tons of people who are writing up the research, and I think it's a good idea for everybody in the industry, the professionals and the practitioners to keep an eye on it. But you know what? I honestly don't think there's going to be one big thing. There's going to be one breakthrough. I think it's going to be refining the details and tweaking things and probably continuing to find out that little things, the minutia, actually doesn't matter so much. Like, that's the direction it went with the nutrient timing thing that we were talking about. People were so worried about making sure they got X grams of protein X minutes after the workout. And as the research has progressed and the level of evidence has built up, we found it's not quite as big of a deal. And yet people want there to be a secret. They want to see that new breakthrough, that one thing come out of the research. And a lot of people who are marketeers, they want to capitalize on it too. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think you started off this call with the right question. I think it's going to be about behavior and psychology. It's if you can follow the fundamentals 90% of the time, you got it made. But most people are struggling to stick with it. Life is getting in the way. They lose focus. They lose motivation. And that's why I'm always going to continue to harp on goal setting. Even if people are getting tired of hearing about it, I'm going to keep writing about motivation. I'm going to keep sponsoring transformation contests where it gives people a reason to get going and get some motivated. And I'm going to keep building a support community because, I mean, if you really want some magic, real genuine support from other people will help you stick with a program probably better than anything else. And, you know, the biggest secret of all isn't one thing. It's putting everything together. So in Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle, the basic program is four elements put together. Number one, nutrition. Number two, resistance training. Number three, cardio training. And number four, mental training. And if I were to tack on a couple more things on top of that, the fifth element would be the social support. And I haven't made this an official part of the program, but I would say that challenge is a sixth element. And that's the magic right there. That's the breakthrough. Putting things together and then incorporating it into your lifestyle.
You mentioned transformation contests, and I'd love to ask you a little bit about that because I think we talked about it on a previous episode, but I know there's lots of people that are trainers and strength coaches and gym owners that listen to the show as well. You know, can you talk about how you like to set up these contests and maybe how they could do it at their place to, you know, get the clientele involved and get their, maybe even like their followers involved in a transformation contest?
Yeah. Thanks for asking. The first thing I would say, and I would say this to fitness professionals and trainers, and I would say this to practitioners and fitness fans, is that the transformation contest is as legitimate and real as it comes. And I was every bit as skeptical as everybody else was years ago, because I thought it was just honestly, I thought it was a marketing gimmick. Okay. It's the weight loss companies need to get before and after pictures to sell their product. They need to sell their supplements or their protein shakes. So let's make all the contestants drink these protein shakes. And, you know, that's weaved into it. And, you know, some of those, there's a little bit of truth to that. But there's something so real and powerful behind these contests that I never would have known it unless I started sponsoring contests myself. And we just finished up our ninth season of a transformation contest. And it's the best thing that has ever happened to our entire community. In fact, I think the transformation contest itself had a heck of a lot to do with the growth of the community and bringing people together for support. So you asked about how we do it. For us, a really important part of it is not to have people doing it solo, but to bring people together to do it in a community. So we do it online in a forum. And one of the reasons it's so motivating is that there's an accountability factor. So to enter our contest, people log into the support forum, which is our Burn the Fat Inner Circle forum. They open up their own transformation journal where they're going to log their progress for one of our contests, which is whether it's 49 days or 98 days. And they do exactly what the Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle program says that we talked about, which is logging in your results every week. They're tracking everything that they want to improve. They want to cut body fat, they're measuring body fat. They want to cut down their waist size, they're measuring their waist size. They want to fit in a smaller dress, they're tracking, they're keeping track of everything. And people who want to improve their health, they're tracking health too. So this isn't just about abs and you know, chiseling out your beach body. It's about health. So every week, every contestant logs in their progress, and there's thousands of other people in that forum watching this all unfold. And everybody knows it's happening. So there's this accountability factor. It's like people don't want a bad grade on their report card, so they work harder so that when they post that progress report, it's a good report card. And it's just unbelievably motivating. And then on top of that is the support factor. So when you give out a grand prize like a trip to Maui and, you know, $800 top of the line iPads left and right, you know, there's a competition element and people want to win, but there's a support element there in that group where even as they're competing against each other, they're all supporting each other. And it's amazing how we all have ups and downs. Even, you know, the most motivated people in the world, even the champions have ups and downs. Arnold Schwarzenegger wrote about how he always had ups and downs. And that's why to him, training partner training was the most important thing that he ever did. And what he wrote about the most in the magazines back in the 70s was training partner training because of that support. So when one guy's down, the other person brings you up and vice versa. And there's this circle of support that goes on. And you've heard the term results not typical before. And when I post these before and after photos up, which you can see on our websites after our contest, I have to like put that disclaimer prominently and say results not typical, not just because these are the people who won, but if you get that support and if you have a challenge going on, you have so much motivation that it just skyrockets the results beyond anything you could do by yourself or without that level of motivation. It's really been incredible, and it's something that I can't imagine stopping doing them now. It's really going to be a part of our community forever. We're just going to find new ways to reinvent and make it more interesting. Different challenges, different prizes, ways to get more people involved. People who don't want to take a before and after picture, we find ways to get them involved. But it's the best thing you can do. Fitness professionals should jump on it, get their clients involved in some kind of contest. And anybody who's been shy about entering one should jump into it, and you'd be amazed when you see what happens.
Very cool. Awesome information. You know, and again, before we wrap up, make sure that you guys check out burnthefatfeedthemuscle.com. And also Tom's blog is burnthefatblog.com. You can check that out and bookmark that as well. Tom, anything else that people should kind of know about stuff that's coming up and just in general about the book before we go?
Well, the book is available right now for pre-order. So you can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any online retailer and put the pre-order in. And then it's going to get released December 10th and it's going to ship then. So, you know, just log into our community, you know, go to burnthefatblog.com, grab the newsletter and check out the blog. Check out our Facebook page, Facebook.com/burnthefat. And you'll be able to see not just the news about the book, but you'll see us posting the results on these transformation contests. And it's incredibly motivating. And hopefully we'll get some of you guys to jump in the next contest. We have a fitness contest going on right now. It's not about before and after pictures. It's about it's called the Million Step Challenge and the Mount Everest Challenge, where we got everybody carrying around their step trackers, their pedometers. And a million steps is 10,000 steps a day in 100 days. And Mount Everest, to climb the 29,000 feet is 29 floors a day. So we got everybody getting up off their couch, leaving the couch potato ways behind and getting more active. So it's not just body transformation contests. We've got the fitness contest going on now. And then coming up in January, if you follow us online at Facebook or Burn the Fat blog, you'll see announcements about the New Year, New You Challenge. We've never done this before. We've always gone kind of against the grain and done contests at different times of the year because we didn't really want to do what everyone else was doing. We did a holiday challenge where people would actually start right before Thanksgiving and do it through Christmas. And we would do it across the summer where everybody else did like a get in shape before summer challenge. But finally, for the first time, first week in January is the Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle New Year, New You Challenge. So I just want to give everybody a heads up on that. It's probably going to be the biggest, most motivating event we've ever done.
Very cool. And like I mentioned in the past, Tom is kind of like my go-to guy when it comes to, you know, the realm of body composition in this field. Just so much great content. The 1-2 punch is always Tom and Lee Peel when I want to like ask questions and stuff like that. So make sure you check out all that stuff. And also, mentioned it before, but if you're listening to this podcast and you still haven't written down some goals, get off your butt and start writing some stuff down right now, because you're really, again, just going to waste a couple more months, or you're at least going to waste a couple weeks before the book gets to your doorstep and you reread that you should be writing down your goals again. But other than that, Tom, thank you so much for taking some time and talking today. And we'll definitely have to talk to you down the road. Maybe we'll grab you on you know, close to the launch of the book, and we'll, you know, answer some follow-up stuff and go a little bit more in depth, and definitely catch up in a couple weeks.
Cool. That'd be awesome.
All right. Thanks, Tom. And thanks, everyone. Don't forget to check out the show on iTunes. You can subscribe through there. You can check us, Tom and I, both out on Twitter.com at twitter.com/ourfullnames with no spaces. And I think that's it. Thanks, everyone. Have a great rest of the week.